It's Wednesday, December 17th, 2008, and you're listening to episode 128 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's Chris.
The holidays are not just rough on your games, they can be rough on your podcast.
Oh, yes.
Man, what it took to even get three of us together this week to record a show is nothing shy of an act of God in Congress. But
it's a lovely three-way.
Nonetheless, we got something out here, and I have every reason to believe we will have something out next week as well, so hopefully there will be no interruption in your regularly scheduled distractions and waste of time at work during this holiday season. Fear the Con.
Yes.
We're going to have a bonus episode here fairly soon. We're going to give you all the details. In the meantime, if you've not signed up, stop by fearthecon.com. If you've already signed up, be sure to go back by, take a look at the games that are appearing out there and sign up for the ones that interest you.
We dumped a whole bunch of new games onto the roster. There's a lot of games out there, and we still need Game Masters. We are doing Fear the Con 2 days this year. That means we need more content, more games, and it does not work without Game Masters. Every single Game Master gets a prize for being a Game Master.
Also, if you're interested in running a game, but you're not sure that you want to take on trying to fill a four-hour slot, we actually have a slot in there, slot 5. It's kind of falls about middle of the day on Saturday, which is only about 2.5 hours long or so.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking to run something, but your game is short, or you're not sure you can keep a group of strangers entertained for 4 hours.
Or then, you want to run a, say, demo. Say, have a favorite kind of game. I know there's a guy named Martian Bob on our forums. He's huge into Cthulhu tech.
Yeah.
That might be a good spot to run some Cthulhu tech.
Yeah, or if you're looking to do a board game or anything like that, then be sure to contact Chad@feartheboot.com. Let him know what you want to run and tell him if it's a short game, and he'll happily put you in that slot 5.
I'm very flexible, as well as I'm willing to work with you.
We haven't mentioned in a while, so let's throw out there the Warhammer Guild.
Yes.
If you're playing Warhammer, the MMO, we still have a guild which is now on the Monolith server. We got a server merge.
Yeah, well, so we got the message loud and clear from the people at Mythic that the server we were on was going to close down eventually. So we decided to move while the getting was good.
Order Side Guild, called Fear the Boot, very clever name. We were up all night on that one.
Yeah.
But where'd you come up with that one?
If you play Warhammer Online or would like to play Warhammer Online, we'd love to have you. More information on the forums.
If you're absolutely sick of World of Warcraft and the sameness of it, if the afterglow of the new expansion has worn off, come join us on Warhammer Online. We'd love to have you.
It's funny. They have that new commercial for Wrath of the Lich King that has Ozzy Osbourne in it.
And, oh, that's a great spot.
Well, I found an extended version. I still think the Wolf Mr. T was the best, but maybe it's
kind of... I like the William Shatner one myself.
I have to say I'm at a draw between T and Shatner, because they're both, I mean, first of all, it's Mr. T, and then you got the Shat. I mean, they're both, they're both good. The
but T has a Night Elf Mohawk. He's inventing his own classes. I would play a class invented by Mr. T. If I got a new MMO and I was flipping through the book and it just had all these different classes, and they're going to be like the garbage elemental. But if it said, there's a little seal on it said created by Mr. T, I would play that class. So anyway, I was watching that clip of the Ozzy Osbourne one. I found one online. It's actually, I don't know, I'll say it's an extended version. It's a little bit longer and they have some added stuff in it. But one of the things I found that was really funny was they were subtitling what Ozzy Osbourne is saying.
Because you can't understand him.
But here's the thing. Normally, you can never understand a thing the guy says.
Mm-hmm.
But in this commercial, I have no problem understanding him. Even on TV, before I saw the subtitles, I had no problem understanding him. I cannot understand a damn other thing said in that commercial.
Hmm.
What the guy from the studio's cutting in and saying, what the Lich King is saying. It took me, I don't know how many runs through a commercial to figure out what they were saying, but it's Ozzy Osbourne, they subtitle. It's like, dudes, you've got a great ad campaign. You apparently have a pretty good ad company. You really need some creative editors who can listen to this objectively and be like, yeah, you're harder to understand than Ozzy is, and that's a feat.
And that's the ironic humor of it all, is that you can understand Ozzy, but you can't understand the people in the background, and they're not subtitling. I got to ask, because I don't think I have
it's
seen
like
the extended version.
Being more colorblind than Liberace.
What I would like to have seen in that spot, though, is I would like to have seen Ozzy, because in the end of this, at least the version that I've seen, is that Ozzy has this big wave of energy coming at him from this other Prince of Darkness. And that's kind of where the spot ends. I would really like to see Ozzy beat that guy just because I think Aussie fans would appreciate that a lot more.
All right.
Just the fact,
time for Fear the Boot asshole poll. Would anyone here actually put their money on the Lich King in that fight?
No.
I didn't think so.
I don't play the game, so I have no opinion.
I stopped playing several years ago, so.
So, Gamedar.
Gamedar, yes.
Gamedar.
I actually call it...
Chris?
I'm setting up my Gamedar.
Oh.
I thought that
we
was
thought there's something wrong with Audacity.
Did we just lose Chris?
I activated my Gamedar. I detect no other gamers around me.
I just start hearing these feedback beeps. You're a little too good at this.
yeah, your Gamedar is excellent.
We are talking about Gamedar, just to be clear.
Yes, game.
I actually call it Nerddar.
But Gamedar
really...
just sounds so much funnier.
Well, Gamedar sounds is very clever. Geek sense, my geek sense is tingling, you know, that kind of thing.
I can spot a nerd a mile away. I just have this, like, today at work, this actually happened. There's this woman I work with, and she's...
Should we explain what Gamedar is? I think most people know, but...
No, we shouldn't. They should just figure it out. Anyway...
If they can't figure it out, then their Gamedar is not very good.
Yeah, exactly. There's this woman at work, and she's a very attractive young woman who is exceedingly normal. And
is she the kind you don't bring home to mother?
I have no idea. But I can't really say because my boss listens to the show. But anyway, she's very, very normal. Watches sports and goes out and parties and, you know, has lots of other friends who are normal and does not get the whole geek thing at all, doesn't play video games. Well, I'm a really, really big nerd. I've got like a technical blueprint of a BattleTech mech in my cube. I've got posters from Portal in my cube. I've got a plush head crab in my cube. I've got like stuff from Hellboy in my cube.
I never decorated a single cube at any office I
Maybe
ever had.
Maybe that's why you hated corporate life.
No, I could go on. There are many reasons I hated corporate life. Let me tell you right now, the decorations had nothing to do with it.
But I hang my geekery on.
Well, I did get in trouble for having a Mr. Housing Market Bubble mug when I worked for a home building company. Of course, it's funny how that worked out in retrospect. The company's now out of business because Mr. Housing Market Bubble popped, but go on.
But anyway, I hang my geekery on my cube walls quite a bit. And I just got a Portal poster. I got the one that says courage is not the absence of fear. And it has one of the energy balls going right towards the guy. And she comes over and she made fun of my BattleTech poster. And then she starts making fun of my my Portal poster.
And then you took a crowbar.
No. I saw a poster that said I'd hit that. And they had a picture of Gordon Freeman smashing an alien's face with a crowbar. It says with a crowbar. But anyway, she starts making fun of it. And then I'm like, well, somehow I'm like, hey, but I have this. And this is at least cute, isn't it? And I take my plush head crab and I kind of like shake it at her and she's like, oh my God. And she's picking it up and she's making fun of it and she turns it over and it's got the mouth of the head crab on the bottom with all these spiky teeth around it. And she's like, hey, you know what this is like? And I'm like, what? I thought figuring she'd make some, you know, vulgar joke or whatever. And she's like,
it looks like Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. Right? She's like, this is like that big spiky pit in Star Wars, the one that eats that guy. And I'm like, the Sarlacc pit? And she's like, yeah, that's the one. I'm like, you're a Star Wars fan? And she's like, I'm like, you're a Star Wars nerd. And she's like, well, I'm kind of embarrassed that I admit that.
You guys should decorate her office. Like, wait, come in early one morning with a bunch of Star Wars posters and completely deck out her office.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Outer.
Yeah, I should tell her. She was like really embarrassed and she had to admit, she's like, yeah, I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. And you would never guess that by looking at her. There's another guy in who I work with too, and he is a huge closeted nerd. And he's like, he can quote you Futurama back and forth. He can quote you Family Guy. He reads, he watches, huge fan of Battlestar Galactica. I pulled up a website and it had a picture of the ship from Firefly on it. The Serenity, or it's called Firefly.
Right.
I forget. It slips in my mind right now. I'm sure the fanboys will.
I think it's a Firefly class and then Serenity.
Yeah, that's it. And it had the ship, but it wasn't labeled in any way. It was just decorating the page. And he's like, hey, that's the ship from Firefly. I'm like, how do you know that? You're a nerd. And he's like, no, I'm not a nerd. I'm not a nerd. And it's like we go through it, all these different things, all in the Star Wars, all in the Star Trek, all this different stuff, and plays video games. And he's just like, no, I'm not a nerd. I'm not a nerd. Well, I come to find out basically his wife would make fun of him because she's really, really normal. And if he was into anything even remotely geeky that he couldn't pass off as mainstream, she would just mock him relentlessly. So he's a closeted nerd. And I identify these people and I try to gather them around me. I love nerds. Right, I love geeky.
Well, let's
people.
Talk about that. How? Let's talk about the game dark. You walk into a new situation, you go into a new job, you go into a new church, you go into whatever. You're stuck at a family reunion with cousins you don't really recognize because last time you saw almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out if they play D&D too. Now, sometimes, all right, let's be honest. Sometimes you just look for the negative social stereotypes.
Yeah.
If somebody's
fat beard with a black t-shirt with a funny
with a witty saying on it. That's a quick way of doing it. And that works probably more often than we'd like to admit.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say,
go ahead.
Don't be bashful. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to.
Without the other
I usually kind of. You son of a bitch. I usually wait around for the Monty Python quotes to come out, or sometimes if I have suspicions, I'll drop a Monty Python quote. Ooh. And then we'll see if there is a reciprocal.
Yeah.
You know, if they follow up with the next quote. I know this guy watches those movies, right. So I'm thinking maybe, just maybe.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I had never considered humor. Throughout the show, I've given a couple different schemes I've used in the past, but I have never considered humor as a backdoor to discovering someone's inner nerd. Is there humor? What kinds of things they joke about? What kinds of references can you make that they get?
Yeah.
Versus those you're just kind of laughing politely at or scratching their head at?
Mm-hmm.
Is the delivery of their wit a little bit too British?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
First, now if you're in England, that's not going to help you. But if you're in America and you can spot somebody watching the BBC, they're probably nerds.
Thank you.
For me, humor actually has been the most prominent way I've been able to peg people in that manner. And it usually is like you say, it comes from the more obscure the stuff is, the references they may make or the jokes they may do, then, you know, the odds of them being a geek or a nerd in the gaming sense, definitely they increase quite a bit.
Another way that I find nerds too is that I shine the light of nerddom. I am such a huge unabashed nerd.
Well, you are uniquely shameless.
Yes. And I really out myself, so to speak. People talk about their hobbies and they ask me, it's like, oh, well, what's your hobby? Well, I play role-playing games and I do this podcast and we're fairly successful. We have a lot of fun with this podcast and such. And you'll be surrounded by five or six people. And most of the people will be like, well, what's a role-playing game? You might get lucky and someone might say, is that Dungeons and Dragons? Is that it? You'll get one person who will be like, yeah, I played that a little in college. You know, and then it's like, oh,
It was all trying to look ashamed.
Yep.
I watch Star Trek, but I don't really like it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, but you can quote episode names, and you can, like, you know, you can do all the quotes and stuff from Star Trek, and you have that Geordi LaForge tattoo you hide and stuff.
Flip side of that is when you get the ones who, you know, and a lot of people, oh, yeah, Dungeons and Dragons, you know, oh, do you go in the steam tunnels, they might throw that out at you, but you know, most people generally are pretty cool of it, because, you know, I've done that too, where you just kind of bring it up in conversation, but the fun ones are when they get really, the ones who get really uncomfortable about the whole thing, and which amuses the hell out of me. There's a woman at work who's like that. I've, you know, made the offer, hey, you know, anytime you ever want to, you know, if you're interested, you want to sit down on a table, be great, you know, and she just gets this look on her face, like, you know, that would be the absolute last thing she'd want to do, even if she was starving and had a table full of food, you know, there'd be no way she'd want to sit down and pick up a character sheet. Dan, I was going to ask you, so you fish these people out, and then what do you really do at that point? I mean, do you actually go ahead and pick up the conversation with them? Do you just
That's where I fall apart is on.
Hey, you're a gamer or what? I mean, you know, is it worth it to proceed on? Do you suddenly become elitist if you realize that they play games that you don't like?
I fail to seal the deal every time.
Man, just kiss the girl.
That's well, see, as I've mentioned in past shows, my game dar technique is I'm
yeah. Okay. Yes, master. Tell us your
No, actually, mine's not that good. I really don't have much of a game dar. Because I can look
I feel
at
like I'm talking to the swinging single here. It's like,
I can look
tell
at
me all your techniques.
I can look at somebody and maybe kind of wonder, but I'm really terrible at telling. I just, I don't know why, I just suck at that. But the way I'll find out is I'll ask, we'll start on safe ground.
Yeah,
I'll mention something like a TV show.
I totally bypass.
I know you do.
I have the T-shirt. I'm the fat beard waving the flag.
But I start at video games or whatever and work from there. Which I have mission pass show, so I won't belabor this again. But once I found out that they are a gamer, I don't know. I just tuck that bit of information away that hey, so and so's pretty cool. They play role playing games, and that's the extent of what I ever do with the information.
Oh,
see,
now,
why
wasted.
Don't you pursue? See, that's that. See, suddenly then it's like when you're at that. That boring Christmas party, and you realize, oh, hey, you know, Bob from accounting, he's a gamer. And
are you talking about the Bob from the Insight commercials?
No. No, that's
you know what
no,
I
he,
did no, the last.
He doesn't need to be a gamer. He apparently has plenty of game now because he uses Insight. So,
you know what I did to the last person who came up to me and just out of the blue, you know, we started talking about video games. I mentioned that I like role played, somehow worked its way into the conversation. They're like, oh yeah, I've role played a little bit. I handed them a Fear the Boot business card.
That's excellent.
Yes.
I wish I was so brave, but I'm not.
Job well done.
There's a reason why I do a podcast and not a live show on a street corner in Times Square.
It's not that you have a podcasting face. It's just that you have that podcasting confidence.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I am brave enough to sit in front of an audience of three people I already know and talk about things we've already talked about.
See, here's the, now I have some sympathy for you, Dan, because here's the problem that I've run into before. I realize these people are gamers that I didn't know were gamers before. So I start having a conversation with them about games they've played, how long they've played, when was the last time you gamed, so on and so forth. And eventually the conversation comes around to like their particular style of gaming or the things that they do at their gaming table. And they start describing things that A, either totally make my skin crawl in regards to certain types of gaming, or again, or the end of the conversation, they start talking about their character. You know, that typical thing that most gamers don't want to hear about.
The demon gnome. Or, you know, and
they get into areas of gaming that I'm like, I just don't have any interest in whatsoever. So then you're kind of stuck at that point. So now you've got to continue the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just say, oh, sorry, you suck, I got to go.
I have that problem at work. There's a guy at work that I've worked with him ever since I was at Scottrade. And he is a hardcore. He's been gaming for years and years and years. But he plays a certain style of D&D that I don't play. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's a dungeon crawler. They, you know, his group does do a lot of role playing and in-depth characters and all that. But, you know, they're very, very crunchy, very tactical, very rules oriented. And I'm not. And I'm like the only person at work he can talk to about role playing games. And he comes over and it's like, oh my God, I just don't care. But I understand.
He starts talking about greasing up the boat that they send down the dungeon hallway.
You know, his group would probably do something like that. So, and, you know, actually several of his players listen to the show. It's the Lazy GM guys.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. He writes for our front page blog. So, yeah, you know, I do love some of his stories and whatnot, but yeah, we just have two totally opposite kind of games. He invited me to one of his games one
How
time.
How charismatic is this guy? We should get him on the show because his columns are really funny.
He's good. I think he'd be pretty good. I think he's pretty charismatic.
Maybe we'll get him in here to guest for a show.
I don't know, but he's really lazy. I mean, that would require like...
Well, he's a lazy DM. It doesn't mean he's a lazy coworker.
He's a lazy
can
SOB.
Can he Skype from the couch?
Well, if he comes over and talks to you about this all the time, apparently he's got some energy for it. So can we convert that into him getting in the car and coming over here some night? And
I don't know. I'll ask him
about it. See, because he's funny on the blog, so I'd love to have him on the show.
He's a good guy. I like him a lot.
Maybe that's why I don't seal the deal with these all this stuff, because of the kind of things that you and Chris are saying that it's just safer never knowing.
Well, you certainly do run a risk.
Because I have people I game with. I have a gaming group. It's not like I need to look for other gamers. And so it's just kind of nice to know that here's somebody who's on our side. And that's really all I need to know.
Did I ever tell you the story of the inspiration for the first episode of Fear the Boot? The gaming story one? Where I got all the stories of bad gaming stories?
No.
We recorded during the week. I don't even remember when we recorded. That weekend, I helped a friend of mine move or paint, or he needed some heavy lifting done, basically. So he got me and several people in our World of Warcraft guild at the time, which this was like several years ago. And we were all locals. And
it was like Ozzy Osbourne, Mr. T, yes, exactly. William Shatner. Yeah.
The Shat.
The Shat. I'm sorry.
That's what he's
called.
The Shat
comes right
him.
Before the flush. I mean,
that's what they call him. It's, you know, he's the Shat. The Shat's the Shat. That's just the way it is.
Well, I can't disagree with that.
All right.
So anyway, he helps us, and he's paying us. Basically, he bought a case of beer and he's barbecuing for us. That's the kind of the payment. We're helping him out because he's a friend. And so anyway, we help him do whatever. I don't even remember what it was. We help him do whatever that was. And we're sitting on his back porch, his nice, beautiful house, and he's barbecuing. And everybody there is a gamer. It's just that he has his own game. I have my own game. And then the three or four other people, they all game together in a separate game. Well, I remember I was sitting there and they're exchanging gaming stories and I'm just sitting there and I look up and, you know, the sun's at a certain place in the sky and I fade out. I just am like, I fall into the expanse of my own mind and imagination. And I kind of come out of my torpor a little bit and I look up and I have noticed that the sun has moved in the sky and they're still talking about their damn gaming stories. It was physically painful.
I owe my current gaming group to GameDar, as a matter of fact. My oldest son plays in a band, and he and his band got the opportunity to play at like an actual club. Okay, this was before, it was like earlier in the hours or whatever, before they're actually really serving drinks and whatnot, because he's still in high school. So we're sitting there at a table, you know, listening to him play, and they started to play the song Hail to the Geek. And I can't remember the name of the group, but it, you know, it's obviously it's a song about being a geek. And so one of the lines in there is, I play Dungeons and Dragons. I've got like a 7th level halfling thief or something like that. Okay. So sitting at our table was one of his, basically a classmate. So the line Dungeons and Dragons comes up. And of course, you know, you're in that club scene and there's a bunch of people there and they're loud. And so they say Dungeons and Dragons. So naturally I just cheer. You know, because that's cool, you know, because you can get away with doing that kind of stuff. And then she also at the table, she cheered and her name was Rachel. To me, she cheered with too much enthusiasm for that particular line than I thought she should have, you know, unless she was a gamer. And so I looked at her and I said, do you play?
And she's like, what?
Yeah, and she's like, what are you
doing? Do you play? And the police are walking over.
Yeah, really. And then suddenly I have to register. But
Chris also had a crimson pumpkin this past Halloween.
But no, the actually for us they gave I think they were purple pumpkins or something like that. Anyway.
That's totally different.
Hang on, let me go out and look.
It's a totally different conversation. So anyway, so yeah, she said that she did indeed, though she hasn't played for some time, but then she goes on to say that she's, you know, her and her older brothers would play as well as her dad. And her dad is, you know, he's around my age and he happened to be there. So eventually, you know, when things got quiet, when they took a break, I went over there and he and I started talking about it. And it took actually a few months to finally get going. But, you know, now I go there on a, you know, semi-regular basis and cool. I sit down with him and his sons. Yeah. And so that was all, it's all totally GameDar because of circumstances. But if I hadn't felt that she had cheered with more enthusiasm than I thought she should have, you know, I never would have known.
That's awesome.
But Chad, it is. It actually is very awesome. But Chad, I know exactly what you're talking about when you're talking about that physical pain. Cause, dude, you know, and the thing is, you know, I mean, as tough as it is to listen to stories like that forever and a day, you know, the thing is, and I hate to use the buzzword, but at the end of the day, I still feel happy to like know these new gamers, even if I don't ever do anything with them again or see them again until next year at Gen Con or whatever the case may be. It's like, you know, hey, just like you said, Dan, we're on the same side. And so that's cool. You know, we know that we're a small community as it is anyway.
You know, another way that I identify my GameDar sort of goes off. Halloween is a really good time.
See what people dress up as.
See what people dress up as and see whose costumes are a little too accurate. You know, it's like you have the generic caveman, the generic gangster, and then you have Jack Sparrow where every single beat is in place. Or you have, you know, the Jedi, and it kind of looks like he's in a bathrobe, and then you have the Stormtrooper, who is in the white armor and all that sort of stuff, and it just different things like that. I actually found a gamer in one of my groups because of a Halloween thing, and I never thought of talking to her, never thought anything about, you know, that she might be a gamer or geek or anything like that until she came to Halloween. This was when I worked at the grocery store where everybody dressed up. She came, everyone was dressed up as a clown or as a puppy dog or as whatever. She came in a Ren Faire dress and like a full gown or whatever it's called. And I was like, she goes to Ren Faire's. And if she goes to Ren Faire's, perhaps she. And so I started a conversation with her, and I don't know, we talked about Star Trek and different things, and one thing led to another. And next thing you know, she's part of a gaming group. So, and I've done that too with, there's other
only
things.
On a gaming podcast is a phrase, and one thing led to another, end with gaming.
That's right. Why waste your time with anything else? I mean, come on. But there's also like I think you mentioned this earlier, Dan, like the sort of the gateways too, where there are semi mainstream things that could lead to other things in a conversation, like anime. Anime has become really mainstream. You know, 15, 20 years ago, it was not. You couldn't even find it. You had to go to your geekier friends who had the anime to get your anime fixed. But now it's everywhere. It's on network television now. You know, everybody watches anime, whether they know it or not. And so you find someone who's a fan of anime, they might be fans of other things too.
You know, it's not a gateway drug.
What's that?
The DM screen.
Oh, don't know. All right, Chad, are you ready to fight?
It's not a gateway drug. It's more like a crutch.
I'm working to get the
It's
worst
more like a cane that bad GMs use.
I'm looking to create the...
I can feel him across the internet.
I got my fists out. I'm ready to swing.
Chris,
come on.
I feel the hate rays coming from Ohio or Idaho or wherever that godforsaken country you come from.
Lash out in impotent rage.
Come, Chris. Tell us how you're wrong.
The GM screen. Let's talk about the GM screen.
You had to calm down for a minute.
I do. I have to calm down. The thing is I forgot to bring my glass of water down here, so I'm going to get all dry mouth.
You're all
sitting here
frothy
in my rant. It's going to get all foamy.
You get yourself into a lather.
No, I am. All right, Chris. As soon as I heard Dan do his little clunky segue, I started swinging.
Well, that's
my
what I was
here.
Trying to congratulate myself on the roughest transition a podcast has ever had. But you guys wouldn't shut up, so I couldn't do it. So now I'm all let down.
Well, okay, Chris. Let's
really
approach
hard
this
to
from
screw
a different
that up.
Angle.
No, all right.
Why?
All right.
Why do you use a GM screen? Correct.
All the time.
And I do not. So those we have polar opposites here.
We do. We do.
Stay tuned.
First, before we get to, let's all establish this one fact. I still like you, regardless of what you say and or do at your table.
I love you, Chris Hussey. I love you more than a man probably should.
I can't stand either one of you. I pray for both of your deaths every night.
Excellent.
Now that we're all in the open, let's go ahead. Chris, why do you like the DM screen?
The GM screen is necessary for a number of reasons, and I've been taking notes while we were talking about GameDAR here, just so I can make sure that I make all my points.
I got lots of notes in front of me. Yeah.
All right. It's necessary for a lot of things.
I'm waiting to hear one.
Here's one. Well, you know what? If you let somebody else talk in the damn show for once, you'll get one.
Chris is going to fly down to St. Louis and start flipping the lights on and off. You don't let him talk, Dan.
One of the main reasons that maybe not isn't as noticeable is, to me, it establishes a hierarchy and establishes a certain sense of authority. Now, that doesn't mean to say that you're not setting yourself up as the GM dictator.
So you're saying you're better than me?
No, I'm not at all.
Wait, okay. I want to hear why this is even necessary.
Yeah, here's why. Because when you're doing this essentially communal storytelling, you've got one side doing their part and you've got the other side doing their part. One of those sides still, in a certain way, has to be the guide. Yes, the players decide what they want to do, and they tell the Game Master what they want to do, but the Game Master still is the one who gives them the results of their actions. You know, I could sit there and, like you say, I flap my arms and fly away. Well, sorry, I run the world, you doesn't work, you fall off the cliff and you die. There is still that authority that's there, and the screen helps in a certain subtle way to create that sense. Now, I'm not talking to,
by obscuring,
you know,
the player's vision.
Well, yeah, so do you really need some physical marker for that? I mean, isn't the very nature of the events occurring? I mean, when there's four people in the car, there's only one driver. I don't need a driver's screen. The fact that when I move my hands, the car turns. When you move your hands, you just look silly. I mean, that seems to do it. I mean, is not just the events at your table sufficient to create this?
It's a different circumstance. You can't use the driver analogy. And I'm not saying it's like it makes an overt way. I think it works in that very subtle way, because the players look towards the game master as everything that's going on that they, in a sense, are on a mission to discover is behind that wall. And the person behind that wall is the keeper of those secrets. And so it establishes that position of authority. And they have to go and they have to deal with it. Now, I keep saying authority, and it keeps coming across like I'm saying like someone's in charge and is demanding and pointing fingers and all that kind of stuff. That's not what I'm talking
authority.
About. Authority.
Chris, let me ask you something. A couple years ago, I was taught this little technique, which is to make sure you've understood someone, to repeat back what they've said in your own way of saying it, kind of see if you've internalized it. So let me repeat back what I think I'm hearing, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong. Now, in a previous episode, we talked about allowing everyone at the table to roll their own dice because it created a tactile element to the game. Now, even though in truth, you don't control the roll of the dice, and rolling the dice is not the same as swinging a sword, it still adds some added sense, in the most literal term here, I mean like senses and sight, sound, touch, to the game. That there's something you're holding, something you're doing.
Yes.
Is what you're saying is that the DM screen has a similar, albeit perhaps subconscious, effect of that it is a visible reminder to everyone there that there is some kind of impenetrable mystery to what the DM knows and what the DM is, his role in this event. Is that kind of
what... Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying. In a certain sense, as the group that's sitting around the table, there's still, you know, there's still a leader, and that screen helps to, in a subconscious way, delineate who that leader is, and the players focus and point themselves in that direction.
I think the reason I have, even though I don't agree with that entirely and I don't do it at my table, I think the reason I have some sympathy for that is because one of the things that I think we've been relatively blessed with is the fact that we have fairly ordered tables. Now, I know we may crack our jokes and go off on these wild tangents and such, but we still get back on topic. We're not competing with each other. We're not whatever. But I've sat in a lot of games where it is very raucous, even in good nature, at times very cutthroat. And sometimes the GM really does have to crack the whip to remind the players there who's in charge. And so I can understand.
Charles is in charge.
That's back when Nicole Ager looked really good. But I do understand why. I guess I understand why some groups would want that. I don't think I need it, but that's just because of the nature of the group I have.
I think the purpose of the GM...
I've been there, though, in the past, going way back when. I've been there, like, way, way, way back when we were still gaming with, like, Darren and Neil.
Well, you had, like...
They were always trying to, like, steal my notes and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I...
Well, there was a certain teenage obnoxiousness. Yeah, you need a ruler to whap knuckles.
I did, yeah, absolutely. So I understand that.
Well, and that's related, too, because in a certain sense, the screen can help, in that case, keep, players honest. Because, and that actually kind of leads into one of my other points.
I think the TPK keeps players honest.
Well, yes, that'll always keep players honest and humbled at the same time.
I think
by TPK, we mean the toilet paper key. If you're going to go do something in the bathroom and you want to use toilet paper. So go on, Chris. What's your next point?
Well, he doesn't have one. I do. No, I have, let's see, I have one, two,
I have 36.
I have at least three more points.
Oh my God.
All right, go ahead.
Aside,
what's your next one?
Aside from keeping players honest, it also helps to maintain a sense of mystery.
Well, let's talk about keeping players honest.
Keeping players honest, whether it's in the intentional or the accidental eye that wanders onto, if you're doing a pre-written module or if you've got your own notes, you know, players may sometimes purposely look to see what they can see or inadvertently look to see what they can see, particularly in the case of, if you got a map there. And so if you see something there, whether on purpose or on accident, Now you suddenly, as a player, armed with that knowledge, and whether or not you intend to, you may inadvertently still act on that knowledge.
See, I've had games in the past, as I just said, where people were trying to look at my notes. My current group does not, because one of the things that we all get out of the game is that mystery and discovery and sense of accomplishment, which you don't have if you know the end. Like if Dave or Chad or anyone's GMing, I don't want to see the notes, and I have no...
Our game masters leave the notes out and go to the bathroom, and we don't.
I do still sometimes kind of put things on a book and tilt it up so people can't see it. Or if I'll go to the bathroom, I'll turn it upside down. Not because I'm worried anyone's going to yank them.
Like you said, like Chris said, the wondering
keep
eye.
Keep the honest. I'd hate to, like one of the things I hate is if I'm playing a video game and I can't get past a spot. And so I look online for help just because I want to know how do I solve this puzzle. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's always some Yahoo.
There's a banner ad that does a pop up and it's a flash as you know, Snape killed Dumbledore.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, gee, thanks.
And so I'll go in there and look at it. And some guy's like, well, to solve the puzzle here, you just do this. But when you're at the end of the game and the guy you thought was your best friend up to this point in the game turns on you and spoiler, 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 then you won't be flipping any switches then. It's like, pizza.
Bleeping.
Yeah. And so. I do understand that if I have a map or some NPC doodles or whatever, then even someone looking over and just catching the slightest little bit could have a part of the game ruined. Not that I'm trying to hide per se, but that they don't want to see.
I think that is probably the only point where I agree that a Game Master screen has a use. I think the Game Master screen should be used if you have tons of maps. And, you have photocopies of your maps and stuff, and you have a lot of stat blocks, and you have, like, a whole lot of... Basically, the Game Master is a paperwork-heavy Game Master, and if players want to see what's going on, you got to go to the bathroom sometime, or you got to take your, copious amounts of notes and paperwork with you every time you got to take a whiz. You know, if they want to cheat, they're going to cheat. And that's just not fun. You just ask, we're all adults here. You just ask them not to. And if they don't, well,
exactly.
But the wondering eye, I definitely see that, it's like, oh, you look over. I know that if I looked over and I just happened to see something on Dan's notes that what's going to happen next, I'd be like, ah, damn it. I didn't want to. So that's how that happens. Great. Now I know.
Right.
And I don't get to play that out.
All right, Chris, exactly. What's the next one on your list?
All right. Point Chris. I'll give him that.
Yes.
Point,
yes. Yeah.
Point Chris.
I gave him a half point on the first one. Give him 90% of a point on this one.
Yeah.
All right.
Related to that.
I'm going to keep track of this. Chris so far has 140 cents.
Excellent.
I'm going to mail this to him. When this is going to be his Christmas bonus at Fear the Boot. Go on, Chris.
Another point. And this is related to somewhat to hiding the notes. If you use a game that requires miniatures, keeping your bad guys behind that screen, that way, again, because, if you've got your stack of, say, six orcs sitting there and you don't have a screen and the characters come into a room, and the game master starts pulling from the pile, the six orcs there. Gee, I wonder how many orcs are going to end up in this room. Well, it's not going to be any more than six. Oh, okay. So the fun has suddenly been defeated there as well. Behind the screen, however, you just don't know. And so the hand keeps going behind the screen and so the amount of bad guys you're facing keeps increasing. There you go. So then again, in a certain way, it kind of creates a little bit of excitement in a certain way, because it's like, how many more times is he going to keep pulling guys out here? Stop. Or oh, that's it. This is a very practical, tangible thing. I'll get more into the more esoteric stuff in a little bit.
Now,
but
how do you handle that during setup? Because if you come with a box of minis and you take six orcs and put them behind the screen, unless you have some really monstrous screen, I've got to think an observant player is going to see that.
Well, they may eventually see some, and most of your screens are either the trifold or the quad panel kind of thing. And, for me, when that kind of stuff comes up, I'll usually put a bunch of things behind the screen.
Have you seen the,
in addition with my dice.
Have you seen the Wizards of the Coast?
Oh, I was going to get to that.
Demo wall
we'll get to that one.
That they made. You can't even see the DM. You hear the, it's like you're constantly battling a disembodied voice that occasionally a tower shoots dice out at you.
That tower is the coolest thing ever. And I want one of those towers. I think that thing is just sweet.
You can't see who you're playing.
Go on, Chris, continue. What is your next point?
My next point
It's so Wizards of the Coast can sell you the DM Periscope. That's what it's for.
You know, and the
or
thing
the
is,
eventual
yeah, you know,
D&D puppets.
Yeah. Oh those, my god, I'd play that game.
That would be fun. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be really D&D. Awesome. Little dragon.
I'm gonna come. You know, it's like Toy Wars. I'm gonna come up with an RPG. I know Toy Wars isn't really an RPG, but I'm gonna come up with an RPG that is played entirely through puppets, and like the puppets have stats and do things and. It's like LARPing, except with puppets. You cannot say anything. Your puppet must say it all. And I don't know how this is going to work, but it's going to be great and terrible. Mostly just terrible, but it's going to be great. Terrible,
but I would still play it.
Any game with puppets is going to be good no matter what you do.
All right, Chris, go on.
All right, let's get into a little bit more, maybe some of the more esoteric kind of things here. To me, the GM screen, it's a mood setter. You know, there is, I'm a very visual person. And responding very much to visual stimuli, and that helps me kind of get into the mood. And of course, basically all your GM screens have got some sort of scenic picture on them, something related to the game. It doesn't matter what game it is. It's something that's related to the game, which helps to trigger things in your mind and it help you, you know, get into the setting a little bit more without necessarily having to rely solely on the DM. Now, I'm not talking that it's always going to do that, but over repeated exposure.
So what you're saying,
the screen comes out,
bad artwork, stat blocks, and only seeing the nose up of your DM gets you in the mood for role playing.
My DM's face does not get me in the mood to play the game.
Only
the
half pictures, of his face.
The pictures that are on the front of the GM screen, that does help. And especially when there's the repeated exposure, that when the screen comes out, it's like, yeah, okay, last time the screen came out, you know, we were getting down in this, we were doing this stuff here. And it's a Pavlovian kind of thing where it just kind of gets you in the mood because it's part of the trappings. It's part of the accoutrement,
you know, I'm going to give you a dime on this one. And here's the reason I'm giving you
that
dime.
That's a generous dime, in my opinion.
Because the art and such, maybe. I mean, I look at some gaming art when I'm writing a game because sometimes it gives me a little bit of inspiration. But where I'll give you the dime is if you have traditionally, over the years, gamed with the GM who had the screen, I can understand how on some, I don't know, aesthetic level or whatever.
On some Pavlovian level.
Yeah, some Pavlovian.
Each time you come in, the GM hits you in the forehead with a ruler, and you have associated that with good
but
gaming.
But at some point, I can understand where, okay, if this is just part of your gaming tradition, that maybe the presence of that GM screen just somehow feels right. The same way that we don't play Battletech without the bone dice. Not that we'd need bone dice to play Battletech, but there's just something special about that. So, all right, I'll give you some points there.
See,
you're a charitable man, Dan.
It's Christmas.
But you see, what you're saying is, it's the, but even with Battletech, Battletech's a perfect example of a game that works well. Of course, you don't need the GM screen because you've got all the visual stimulus that you need there with the minis, the terrain, even if it's the flat maps. You lay out those maps, it gets you thinking, and you start to visualize it in your head, and you're seeing what's going to be happening. And even the flat cardboard mech counters come out. Those little plastic bases, all of those things, they're all visual elements that contribute to helping to create that mood. The GM screen for that is part of that. Yes, you lay out your dice in front of you. You do all that kind of stuff. But the GM screen is still a component of that mood and that just that whole setting that's created. And it just kind of gets you going, gets you set up and in the mood. Okay, you ready for my last one, my last main big point?
You've missed two obvious ones, unless your last point covers them. So I may be helping out here a little bit. Go ahead. What's your last one?
You may be helping me get some more money. To me, the GM screen also does a very good job at creating a sense of mystery. You know,
did we already cover this
again?
One?
We did a little bit, but that was more for like the miniatures and stuff like that. But this goes more into whether you're reading box text, whether you're going back and forth with role playing conversation, whatever it is, you're still going over that screen. There's that. It's like that pass through. It's that man behind the curtain that you're interacting with, even though you're not supposed to pay any attention to him. And in a certain sense, you're not paying attention to him because the screen itself is
you're not paying attention to the GM illusion. Because that's really tacky artwork and you can barely see the guy.
See, you keep attacking me on this artwork stuff. And come on, you can't tell me that you can't look at the first edition GM screen of D&D and not get going for that artwork. It's wonderful. It is wonderfully bad.
Maybe it doesn't help that we have Earthshaker sitting in front of us and it's ever present ubiquitous placement here on the table. and I'm just chick here with this huge 1980s hair and this.
Oh, okay. On the other hand, you know, we have the Gen Con.
Right. Yeah, you got Gen Con.
We got the Gen Con players. We have a Cobalt Quarterly here and the Spring 2008 issue, and it has really good artwork on the cover. And I would say, you know, if that were a GM screen, yes, that would have good artwork.
So,
I mean, I admit I'm making fun of bad 80s art.
The only reason I'm not giving you points on this one, Chris, is because you're not Games Workshop and I'm not paying you for the same product twice.
All right. Here's some of my problems with it.
Well, bring in the problems. I'm going to give Chris two here.
Yeah.
All right.
There are two really obvious ones that Chris did not. You guys kind of brought up. Chad, you started to bring up and I cut you off from, but one that never got brought up at all, which is the most obvious use of the GM screen, which is a handy place to keep regularly used stats and notes.
Right.
Because if you put your game notes in front of you, you've got one page, maybe two pages. But if you want to have also, like, let's say, some regularly used stat blocks, like in Battletech, the two hit charts and such, you can't have 16 books laid out in front of you. So a GM screen is a nice way to move that in three dimensions and put regularly used stats in front of you. And I've seen some GM screens where I think, quite frankly, they presume too much about the type of game I'm running or the stats on there really are not that useful. But there's been other games where, yeah, I could really use something like that just to save me repeatedly flipping to the same charts over and over again. Great example of this, a game that I think is begging for a GM screen that I don't believe ever had one, is my oft-mentioned Fastest Star Trek game. During ship combat, I would love to have a DM screen to hide the ship because they're highly visual.
You're not so much in need of a GM screen, although it does serve this purpose, but you need a cheat sheet.
Yeah, a cheat sheet's part of it.
Which is great.
Like, for example, in the Star Trek game, you know, the ship stat blocks are very visual.
Yeah,
if you even glanced at one, you would know what's going on.
You know,
I could hide them behind a GM screen, put all the two-hit charts and such on that screen, and it would be a really good package.
I've even seen clever ones, like a lot of the GM screens I'm familiar with, it just has, like, bad 80s art on the outside and charts on the inside. But I have seen ones that are actually kind of cool in that they have all the charts that the DM would use on the inside and then all the charts that the player would use
on the outside.
And that's kind of clever.
So I was surprised that Christian Ellis, you never mentioned specifically blocks as a...
I guess my tactic going into this was, I mean, first of all, yes, you're absolutely right. That is one of the best reasons to have one. And really, one game that you definitely, in my opinion, you need to have one for sure was Foss's Earthdawn. The step table for all the dice combinations that you had to roll when you were using a talent at a certain step or whatever, they're so complex, you need to have that large table there in front of you so you know exactly, you know, okay, it's 2d6 plus a d10 plus a d8, and then you roll it, because there's no way you could ever memorize that. But I guess my tactic going into this was I didn't want to necessarily pick on too many tangible things only because I felt that would be too easy for Chad to defeat.
But I ended up agreeing with them. Fantastic.
Well, yeah, and you ended up agreeing with. So this, you know, this again explains also why I suck at diplomacy, the game, and suck at fantasy football. I just, you know, I go in there thinking one thing and I'm totally wrong in the end. So I wanted to go with more the esoteric. Well, thank you. I wanted to go in with the esoteric argument.
You try to outthink yourself. You have it figured out, but you don't accept your own solution, so you overthink it and then depart into these hinterlands of.
I think maybe I made my first mistake by taking notes.
Okay.
I should have.
Here's the other one. This
notes.
One Chad brought up earlier, and Chris, you were agreeing with, and I agree with as well, which is sometimes GM screens, especially if you get the really elaborate ones, they're just cool toys.
Yeah.
Like the fourth edition thing you were talking about
I've seen it.
It's a giant castle wall.
I mean, it's.
That has like little shoots for dice and.
Well, I mean,
it's gorgeous.
Like the normal DM screen, I joke about how, you know, you can't see the person and. Generally, they're not that big, but this one is huge. I'm 6'3". If I sat behind this on a normal-sized chair and a normal-sized table, people would see my forehead, and that's about it. I would be struggling.
And there have to be cool tabletop games you can design that would use this thing, like some kind of a double-blind, like, paper football or something.
Well,
the
drawbridge pops down, which is really cool, and you could, like, push out the miniatures out of the drawbridge, which is really cool, and
until
you actually have to start playing this game.
Right.
You can, like, drop the dice down the tower, and
down
the tower is a dice roller.
Yeah, and one of them rolls towards you, and one of them rolls towards the players. And I've not seen...
I don't know why they didn't make that commercially available. I mean, honestly, if there's any gamer bling that somebody's going to want to buy, it's going to be something like that.
Well, certainly that Sultan table that they were selling at Gen Con. It would be something like that.
Exactly. First of all, how could you not want to suddenly play any fantasy-based role-playing game when that thing's set down in front of you? I mean, you see that castle come down, you see the drawbridge come down, you want to play.
Your pants come
down.
You want to
play. Yeah, exactly.
I want.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone's.
I want to play, but I also want to see my GM. Here's what my problems with gamer screens. I go over to my dad's house, and I oft go over there to have dinner with my family, basically, and we sit around his table. My dad has a centerpiece on the table. It's not dominating, and it looks nice and tasteful, but it's kind of tall and large, and so you don't think to remove it. And as the meal goes on, you're talking to people, and you kind of lean right to talk to them, and you kind of lean left, and then they lean right, and eventually someone's like, oh, just get this thing out of the way, and then you move it. And to me, that's kind of how it is with the GM. It's like, there's nothing stopping me from talking to the person and communicating and back and forth with the GM. And, obviously I'm overblowing the size of a GM screen, except for that ridiculous fourth edition one. There's a barrier. There's, as much as you say that there's this thing there that gets you in the mood for gaming, for me, there's a barrier that is mentally there for me. That kind of makes it socially awkward that there's this metaphorical and physical wall between me and this person I'm trying to communicate with. And I just want to reach over and take the GM screen and throw it away and say, okay, there you are. Now there's nothing between us. We're here as equals. And now that we're here as equals, you're the game master and you're in charge. It's your world. Let's tell your story and my characters and we'll make this story together.
So, true to form, I'm going to cut the middle on this one. Chad, I agree with you in that I don't use one. I don't generally feel I need one, but I understand their usefulness. And I can think of situations like the Star Trek game or maybe like a Battletech game, because that's another one.
Notes heavy GMs, yeah.
Yeah, or if you have something that, even not notes heavy, but if you're just doing something where you have like a template for like a ship or a mech or whatever, and you just don't want the people to happen to glance over and notice what's wrong with it, because it's part of their action turns that they're supposed to be scanning these things and such and finding them out. Or if I need a game that has a quick reference to various tables, which, I don't do in most games, but I remember back when we were, once again, going back to Battletech, Tex made up these really nice laminated sheets where it was two-sided, and he had taken every chart in the game and put it onto these two pieces of paper, and that he used to take that with him to tournaments or conventions or such. Well, I mean, could you just as easily have already got two sheets or on a third and you've got a DM screen? Mm-hmm. And so I can see, I can definitely see some of the usefulness. I can see why people would want these. I've seen ones that you can customize, like dry erase or whatever. I've actually seen some really cool ones that have magnet things on them where you can like put an initiative round, like on the outside of it, just sticks to it.
And that's
a
good idea.
You can move the little pieces around to show whose turn it is and such. But I would love to have one that's fully electronic, like an LED or something, or I don't even know what, but I could just
like
put whatever I wanted.
Laptop?
Well, but two-sided and large print. Yeah. So and
a widescreen laptop?
Two-sided? I don't. But I don't know. But
two laptops?
I think that's the other reason I can't pick on the GM screen too much, because I don't always do this, but a lot of the times I'm running the game behind a laptop anyway. Mm-hmm. So I try not to do it, but just, and also like, for example, in our current game, our current Skies of Glass game, I keep folding the laptop down. I only open it when I need to look something
up. Because you don't have a physical copy of the rules.
Right, so. Well, it's also sometimes like you guys are, Skies of Glass being derived from modern day Earth, you guys are in a town, so ever so often I look up a map, or you were in this past game, we're talking to a priest, and so I looked up, well, what's the parish that you guys are closest to?
Right.
And so, just add a little something to the game. Mm-hmm. And that kind of reference, I don't know that I could get that from a DM screen anyway,
right.
But it does still create that physical barrier where for some portion of the game, it's not all the times, I tend to fold it down, but for some portion of the game, I have a barrier between me and you guys.
You know what I think would be really interesting is I think this is kind of a dumb idea in general, but it could be repurposed a little, is the Microsoft Surface. The interactive table.
I would love to have an RPG application of that.
Fantastic for like, role-playing games.
I know, and even like some of our map-based games, we've tried putting on a TV, and people are like, oh, I just feel too detached from it. But the tabletop minis are just too much of a mess. It'd be great to have a map just appear there. Yeah. You can touch your guy to drag him around.
Drag him, move there and stuff.
If I had the money to spend and that was available with a gaming application, I would drop tons of money. That is worth the investment. Unlike
the Sultan
table or what, that's not.
You know what my problem with the Sultan and actually...
$12,000? Was that your problem?
It was a good idea, but it just didn't work out, at least not for me. One of my problems, and this would be the problem with the Microsoft Surface, is that you can pull a chair up to it, but you can't scoot your legs under the table. Your knees bump up against the edge of the table.
You become physically uncomfortable.
Yes.
And that interferes with your gaming.
We've had the same thing just running a game around a typical pool table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For the exact same reason. You really can't, because pool tables aren't meant for you to sit around them.
Yeah, you stand around.
Yeah, but of course you have the bumper getting in your way, and you can't really reach most of the table, and you don't really want to put your drinks on it, and it just becomes very uncomfortable to game around. All righty.
All right, we're calling it a draw. Is that right?
No, you're just wrong.
No, actually, we're going to call this...
We fired our salvos, and now we're just going to walk away.
This is a close win for you. Out of $4, you made $2.40.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not bad.
So you came in better than half. I agreed with you more often than I disagreed with you. So we're gonna call this a narrow victory, but this is a victory for you. So sleep well tonight.
I'm a winner.
How much money are you sending him again?
$2.40.
$2.40. Are you shoving the cash in an envelope? And
yes, I'm gonna send it to him postage due. And
nice.
So, and postage should run about $2.30.
So. As for the rest of you guys, thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later, Dave.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.